Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today on the Sourcing Hero podcast, I am joined by two members of the Rapid Packaging team. Rapid Packaging is a supply-side member of the UNA community and one of the premier providers of end-of-line packaging systems, supplies, technical services, and automated solutions. Sam Singer is their SVP of Sales and Marketing, and Jay Anderson is their Vice President of Sales. So hi, guys. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Hey, Kelly. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
So, Jay, let me start with you. Can you share a little bit more about your current role?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. Thank you so much. So currently, I'm the Vice President of Sales and National Accounts for Rapid Packaging, and my responsibilities are quite simple. I work with customers that have multiple locations nationally, and I provide solutions to them for their current initiatives and the needs that they outline for us.
Excellent. Thank you. And Sam, can I have you do the same?
Sure. So again, SVP of Sales and Marketing, and my responsibility is to support our marketing staff and our sales team with the direction and the strategy and our go-to-market programs as an organization.
Awesome. And I had mentioned in my intro that Rapid Packaging is a member of the UNA community. Sam, how did you connect with UNA and end up becoming part of their supplier community?
You know, it's really interesting. To me, it was more kismet, or the universe brought UNA to us or brought us together. It was I was talking to Jay not long after I joined Rapid Packaging a few years ago, and one of the things that we talk about is how our strength is in the experience we have in the building. We've got over 200 years of experience, and my biggest challenge in the sales organization was, how do I get that experience in front of more customers more rapidly? We're very relationship-driven, and for us, it was, how do we close that gap? And then at the same time, we had one of our salespeople who had been calling on a prospect and that said, hey, we work with UNA, we love UNA, they're fantastic. And she was curious and looked into UNA and led me down the path, and I made a call and connected with Chris, your director there, who's a fantastic guy, and really just made that connection that way. And it's been a fantastic relationship, I think, because we both come at the business from a relationship perspective. And we like to say we're a 100-year organization. We're only 45 years old, so we got a long way to go. And for us, it's important to play the long game, and connecting with UNA allows us to continue to do that, because you really think the same way and have similar values.
And that does end up being so important, right? The values that come into this. And it's funny because, I knew in preparation for having you guys on, you both have roles in sales. Not all of the Sourcing Heroes listeners are in procurement, but I'm going to say a majority of them are. And it's good that we're getting to hear from you guys today, because one of the big topics of conversation in procurement after, especially 2020, is figuring out, in the past, we might have talked about this notion of becoming a customer of choice, and now the conversation has morphed a little bit, and instead we talk about supplier experience. And so I think that's part of why it is so incredibly critical for procurement people, purchasing professionals, supply chain professionals, to get to hear from our colleagues in sales, because the nature of the relationship that you discussed with UNA, and absolutely, Chris Lance is fantastic. The fact that you guys have a good working relationship with them kind of lays the foundation for the types of relationships that you're able to have with the buy side members of the Una community? Because at the end of the day, I mean, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but at the end of the day, procurement and sales aren't really as different as we might sometimes think we are. Am I right?
I 100%. It's interesting that, you know, to me, sales and procurement are almost identical. Yes, you're on opposite sides of the table, but essentially you're trying to do the same thing. You're trying to, I would say, if you're looking at it the right way, you're trying to build relationships so that you can build solutions for your customers. From a sales perspective, our customers might be that end organization, but from a procurement perspective, you're trying to build a solution and support a solution for those operators on the floor that you support.
And that tees us up perfectly. And one of the things we're going to spend time talking about today is really listening to and hearing the voice of the supplier. But before we do, Jay, you're going to have to give me the skinny on this. For anyone that hasn't sourced it or purchased it, what exactly is end-of-line packaging?
Yeah, Kelly, great question. End-of-the-line packaging has to do with a lot of different things, but most importantly, automation and equipment and consumables that are in the end-of-the-line packaging, that are the end of the line. And so those are the products that go out and have to be delivered 100% of the time with no damage. I look at end-of-the-line packaging in three buckets, if you will. The first bucket is you have to prepare it. The second bucket is you have to protect it. And the third is you have to ship it. So preparing is erecting the boxes or preparing the mailers and the baggers and the product that goes in. And then you protect it with the void fill or the bubble on demand or bubble or paper. And then lastly, you have to label it, palletize it, and ship it. So in a nutshell, end-of-the-line packaging is getting the product completely ready to be shipped safely 100% of the time.
And 100% is quite a target, right? I mean, I know that the Hackett Group is a research organization that a lot of us in procurement watch. And, you know, I think they talk about, like, you know, goals north of 90% when it comes down to perfect orders. Now, granted, that's on the transaction side, right? But if we're aiming for somewhere north of 90% just on quote unquote perfect transactions, actually moving a packaged product and having it show up undamaged, in the right place at the right time, 100% of the time, that's an incredibly lofty goal. You guys must have a lot of processes and frameworks that are focused around tracking and quality. Is that part of the competitive advantage that Rapid Packaging is able to offer?
Yes, it does. And you are correct. 100% is a lofty goal. It reminds me of my old college baseball coach that said, nobody's perfect, but there's no reason why you can't try to be.
Absolutely.
And so that is absolutely what we try to do is provide customers with the solutions to get to that 100%, or like you had mentioned, Kelly, 90%, which is a good outcome. And we do have the goals, and we have, you know, whether it's sustainability or whether it's damage rates or dim weight or things in regards to that. We do have a lot of processes and procedures in place to make sure that we are checking those boxes, so to speak, with our customers as it relates to the initiatives they bring forward.
Now, staying with you, Jay, and we'd had a conversation, you know, hopefully this is, again, procurement to sales from the bottom of my heart, an okay thing to say, but Rapid Packaging provides what might be considered a commodity product. How is it that you find ways to differentiate so that your company, your team, your solution stands out among the alternatives?
Yeah, great question again, Kelly. So commodity products are something that we provide. We can call those consumables or commodity products. The best way to put this is when we talk to customers, they come to us with a problem or something that needs to be addressed. And so the way we talk to our customers or talk them through or present to our customers is we look at it, and again, I like to say it in three different ways. Current state, how are they currently packaging? How are they currently running their business? What are their current damage rates and so on? And what is the desired state? What do they want to get to? What is the company's initiatives? And then how do we get them there? And that is the gap. And so if we look at the gap, we identify the gap as far as increases or decreases, a percentage increase. It could be number of packages going out the door. It could be number of packages that, as we talked about earlier, that relate to less damage. And then it can be how much is there a cost savings? And cost savings come in a lot of different forms. It's not necessarily cost per box or cost per roll. It's going to be the full production and how it runs out the door. So to really bring that back is we identify with our customers, and obviously they're providing us the solution and we're just listening, and then we're providing our expertise of what's the current state, the desired state, and then where do we fill the gap and how do we provide that solution to fill that gap to get them to where they need to be and what their initiative state.
And I think it's interesting. It's you know, when you focus there, I think you kind of are getting towards one of the big challenges that procurement has now. And Sam, I want to bring you in and get your perspective on this. And then Jay, maybe I'll see if you have anything to add. But Sam, when it comes down to it, your team really does have a lot of expertise. You are doing this very focused set of things over and over and over for all different kinds of companies. Do you find that procurement does a sufficient job of asking for and really listening to and then internalizing the advice that you give? You know, do we ask good questions? Are we actively listening? Do you see customers putting into practice the changes or ideas that you suggest? How are we doing on that front? You can be honest. This is a learning opportunity for us. How are we doing on that front?
Yeah, really, it depends on the organization. I would say if I had to give it a percentage, it's probably 40% is a pretty good job, and 60%'s got some work to do. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. The we've seen a couple of big challenges, at least with the customer base that we have and that we work with. One is that our customer base is kind of aging out. So we've been around for a while, and the younger folks that are coming in are eager and excited. As I've seen traditionally in my career, is that somebody who comes in new in a purchasing organization tends to, and I'll put a big asterisk there, but tends to come in and want to make their bones by finding a big cost savings, and they do that by driving the supplier to provide essentially discounts on products, which isn't really where the value is. So that makes it a little bit challenging. There are those that come in and really do appreciate the length of time that we've spent with the organization, will come and ask really good questions. And if I could flip the answer a little bit, Kelly, to give a little bit of advice. I mean, my advice is, as a buyer, the first thing you should do is go out to the floor and talk to your operators and talk to your plant supervisors and really understand what is going on, what challenges these folks face, and what drives them nuts. Because the almost like clockwork, when we see an RFP come through for a midsize or a large organization, it comes out of the purchasing department with very little understanding of how the product is being used, with very little understanding of the relationships that the operators are relying on. I mean, our folks, and we're not the only one in around the country, there's lots of organizations that do a great job sending really talented salespeople in the back door every day to your end of line that can give advice and coaching and support to the operators. And when you try to save a few bucks on discounting product and you jeopardize that relationship, it really does cost the organization, because your operators typically are not being trained internally. They're typically being trained by your suppliers.
And I feel like I need to fill in a little bit of an experience gap here for our listeners, just because we're in an audio-only format. I am both grimacing and cringing at you talking about this enormous RFP that comes out that demonstrates a clear lack of understanding, because I know that's true. I know based on my own experience, that's true. If I wasn't worried about bumping my mic, I would also probably be covering my face because I have to think you're probably right. More than 50%, you gave a rough 60-40, but definitely more than half of us can do a better job listening and soliciting advice from suppliers. Jay, was there any advice that you wanted to add there to what Sam shared?
You know, I think Sam did a great job of explaining it with the large RFQs and so on. One of the things I think is from, if we just break it down to the procurement, the younger procurement person that's just starting, maybe they're part of the company that has moved up to the next role and they're ready to take this on. And I know Sam referenced it, but it's not always cost per role. There are things to consider of overall cost per load and damage and uptime and safety, because we all know that safety is important. If there's a medical claim, that's going to be very costly. So, and then lastly, I would say the workforce. I believe there's challenges out there right now with customers that we have is finding enough people to do the work, and so. I would encourage all of the procurement teams to reach out to the experts, like Sam had mentioned. And, you know, we have numerous employees that have multiple years of experience. And so reach out to them and that'll help and it'll make their job a lot easier.
Now, since we are talking about packaging, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, Jay, is that, you know, when we think of different categories, there are sort of parallel initiatives that come to mind that we're always looking for opportunities to act upon. And when I think about packaging, I instantly think about sustainability. Is this category an opportunity to move the needle on sustainability initiatives that companies or procurement organizations may have in place?
Sustainability is a huge topic and a huge initiative for customers right now. So yes, the answer to that is yes. And sustainability can come in a lot of different ways. It depends on how you look at it. I think when we hear sustainability, we think about biodegradable or home compostable or things in regards to that. And that could be paper air pillows that we provide or plant-based formulations of bubble on demand that we provide. And even biodegradable or recyclable stretch wrap. But one of the things that I think gets overlooked from a procurement point of view is how much gas does it take to ship a truckload of bubble where you're literally shipping air because the product doesn't weigh that much. And that's a sustainability piece that goes farther down the line or is something that isn't thought about very often. And so when we look at automation and end of the line packaging and being able to automate your bubble, in other words, have bubble on demand where one pallet of film is equivalent to a truckload and how much product you can ship and use less gas. And therefore, it really fits in well with the sustainability platform or initiatives out there. So yes, you are correct. Sustainability is a hot topic right now, and it's also huge for the initiatives that we're seeing.
And I think it's important that you point out how expansively we have to approach it, right? As you said, it's not just about how does the product get created? What is it made of? How is it eventually disposed of? It's how do we move it, right? And what types of efficiencies are there to be seized? I think with so many of these initiatives, especially where, to be fair, procurement has not always received a lot of specialized training in something like sustainability. We just hear sort of a drumbeat about like, make it green, make it eco-friendly. You know, what on earth does that mean if I'm used to buying some product or service? And so looking at that, especially something like fuel consumption, that's a lesson that you can learn very well if you partner with someone who can advise you in a category like packaging and then apply it across other categories. But one of the other things, and I sort of allude to it in this idea of procurement being fully prepared to address something like sustainability, we're always looking within procurement at what we call soft skills development. Historically, we don't necessarily have a reputation for being all that warm and fuzzy. Can't imagine you guys have ever experienced the downside of that continuum. You know, we're very, you know, count the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves was one of the first pieces of advice that I got when starting in procurement. And that does not build relationships. It may help the bottom line, but so much of what we're trying to do these days, whether it's sustainability or risk mitigation or diversity or inclusion or some other kind of initiative, requires relationships both inside of the organization and out. And what I'm curious about, Sam, is what types of skills conversations are being had in the sales community? I mean, I traditionally think of sales and business development as being very relationally oriented, right? Everyone wants to do business with or buy from a friend, kind of a philosophy. Where is it in terms of the best practices or journal articles or wherever it is that you find inspiration? What are the conversations around skills and talent that are happening in sales right now?
So, you know, I'm going to step back just a second because I just want to make one comment about the procurement side of the house in terms of relationships, and then I'll address it. It's great that, you know, there are degrees now you can get for procurement, and I'm making the assumption that those soft skills are being taught. And I think they're fantastic. And one of the things that's very, I think, makes the job better for the employee experience as a procurement person, as well as it's better for the company, is to really be stressing the fit side of the house, meaning that you should be looking for suppliers that are a good fit for your organization, because you want to have common values and common cultures, because then you'll work together better. And the only way to do that is to be very transparent about your processes, about your expectations, and so on and so forth. I've worked with many organizations. Lately, I went out and I visited a customer or potential customer, and it was fantastic because the buyer absolutely told me exactly what the plan was, how she made decisions, why she made decisions. And it was just so much easier to decide whether or not we were a good fit organizationally with each other, because it is about relationships long term. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Absolutely.
It's huge. And it's great that more and more procurement is looking at the relationship side of it. And again, pick somebody that fits you, right? If you're a value leader, then you should be working with value suppliers. If you're a cost leader, you should be working with cost suppliers. So that's the way you'll have better relationships long term. On the sales side, I you know, it's interesting. I've been in this business and in the sales business for 30 years, and I will tell you, when I got started, it was you know, talk fast and have a process, and you know, it was a lot like you know we make fun of salespeople, and it's definitely changed, and the relationship side of it is everything. And frankly, I didn't get into sales on purpose. I fell into it because I had a kid and a dog and a house. I needed to pay the bills, and I found I was good at this. So, but my approach has always been to figure out a way to help the person sitting in front of me and sell them what they need. And I truly believe that over the last 10 years, sales has pivoted to more of that approach where people are slowing down. And they're looking to build relationships with customers for the long haul. I mean, when I recruit, I'm always recruiting for attitude and aptitude. Those are my two big things. And then beyond that, I'm looking for people who like to find solutions. And I believe that sales is moving in that direction. And if you're talking to a salesperson who is not somebody who's trying to help fill the gap, as Jay was talking about, then you're probably talking to the wrong salesperson. And we look for that. And we're making, it's much more sophisticated now than it ever was. And we spend a lot of money on our sales recruits today doing DISC evaluations to make sure that their behaviors and motivators fit the role and fit our organization. We are not a super high pressure sales organization. And I think it's really important to find people that are a little bit more temperate than that. And so the DISC, although it's just one component of how we make the decision, it definitely has some consistency in how it shows us what these people's behaviors will be like, their motivators when they're under pressure or when they're in their normal state. And so, you know, building relationships is all about making sure that you've got that understanding. So that's really what we're looking for when we're out recruiting and we're supporting our sales folks.
Well, I think it's interesting. So, you know, what you're really talking about is taking a big picture perspective, right? You know, you said if you're a value organization, partner through relationships with value-oriented suppliers. If you're a cost-driven organization, it's just by necessity going to be a lot more transactional and cutthroat, frankly, when it comes to costs. But if you're trying to do some combination of the both, you have to kind of keep your eye on the horizon. And so I think that's a nice transition to a set of questions that I ask everyone that joins me here on the Sourcing Hero. Now, I usually ask people what the idea of a sourcing hero means to them, because I had said so many of the people that are listening in or that we have on the show are in procurement and therefore do sourcing work. So I'm going to expand this a little bit for you guys. If I start with you, Sam, what does the concept of heroism mean in a business context?
I would say for me in a business context, it's delivering on the expectations of your, I always say customer, because I think everybody has a customer, whether it's internally or externally. So I'd say it'd be delivering on expectations and doing it, you know, with a smile on your face. To me, it's pretty much that simple.
What about you, Jay? How would you answer that question? What's a hero in a business context?
Yeah, great question. A hero in a business context for me is somebody that's providing solutions that mean something to somebody else. And we can all think from a sales point of view that what we know or what we think is the right solution. But we have to ask the questions and provide opportunities for the customer to develop their own solutions. And then we guide them through that process, because then it's a joint decision. And so really it's just providing solutions that mean something to the customer, not necessarily what means something to us or the sales team.
And if I ask sort of a follow-up to that, Jay, staying with you, you know, there's a lot of procurement, purchasing, supply chain professionals listening to this conversation later on. So you've got our ears, and we're always curious about, you know, if we could somehow be in this parallel dimension where, you know, we went to our supply partners and said, like, okay, what, there's no repercussions. What do you want us to know, or what do you want to ask us? If you could say anything to procurement or give us any piece of advice, what would you tell us?
Yeah, I'll break it down to four topics. The first one is identify where you're at, identify what the company initiatives are and where you fit within regards to that. Where do you want to be? So this is back to the current state and desired state. I would say the last two would be, price is not always the answer as far as price per product, because costs or reduced costs come in a lot of different ways. And then the last one would be, find a partner that you feel comfortable with that will deliver those expectations like Sam had mentioned and has the expertise to do that.
And if we stay on this idea of partnership for a minute and think about the relationship that underpins a good partnership, Sam, I'll give you a minute to sort of visualize here. Think about one of the best or several of the best, really mutually beneficial relationships or partners that you and your team have with customers. What are a few of the words that come to mind in terms of how you would describe them?
So there's definitely a customer. We've got a lot of good customers like this, but there's definitely a customer that comes to mind when you talk about mutually beneficial. And I think the first word that comes up is fair. I think it should be fair for both the supplier and for the customer. And the other the other word probably, I guess the best one would be respect, is to respect where you both stand. Can I give a quick example?
Absolutely, you can.
I'll leave the customer name out of it, but we have a customer who goes through a quarterly continuous improvement process. It's a requirement for all of the suppliers to bring to the table solutions to improve their business processes and help drive cost out of the business. It doesn't always have to be product. In fact, oftentimes it's not product related. It's more often operationally focused. And so when we work with this customer, they have a lot of respect for the expertise that we bring to the table. And we have a lot of respect for the fact that they're opening to listen. And then it's fair. It's not a one and done. You try something, it doesn't work, you're thrown out on your ear. They pay us a decent margin for the work that we put in, which I think is fair because of the time we put in. They also know that we're going to be fair. And if there's something that they ask that we can't deliver, but we believe our competitor can do so, and they have a dual supplier relationship on just about everything, we will not waste their time, and we will respect them, and we will say, hey, you should go to so-and-so because I think they can do this better for you. And because of that, we've worked with them for over 25 years. We make really good margin, and they're very happy, and we're not the only one. So to me, you want to have a mutually beneficial relationship, open up the curtains a little bit, and partner with the experts in the field that you're trying to buy from.
And we're working on it, right? We're all kind of like, what was that movie, What About Bob? We're all like baby steps to the bus stop right now. But I think it's conversations like this one, you know, hearing you two guys, because so many of the times, and I'm on the other side of the table, right? We're thinking about how do we figure this out, or how do we get this information? And nobody says, why don't we call up and ask the supplier? And as simple as it sounds, 9 times out of 10, it's because we don't want to look dumb. And I mean, it's a human thing. It's something that we need to get over professionally. But if we want to have the partnerships that we talk about wanting to have, we have to, you know, open up, ask the questions. You know, you guys are professionals. You're not going to be like, that is the dumbest question I have ever heard in my whole life. You wouldn't be salespeople for very long if that was your approach. And so I think we're headed in that direction, but conversations like this one go an awful long way towards giving procurement professionals, regardless of what category they're buying from or what industry they're in, a sense that it is relational, it's two-directional, it should be mutually beneficial, and there's a ton of opportunity for everybody if we can just strike the right tone. So I want to thank you both for being so incredibly open and answering my questions and sharing your point of view. Starting with you, Sam, if folks want to reach out and either ask you about what you shared today or learn more about Rapid Packaging, what would be the best way for them to get in touch?
Well, so easy enough to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn under Sam B. Singer. And if you go to our website at rapidpackaging.com under the Meet Us tab, I believe there's a link there to get to my email address, which is sam.singer@rapidpackaging.com.
And Jay, how about you? What's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, and mine would be the same. I would say the website, going to rapidpackaging.com, and then I'm also listed under there as far as, or it's jay.anderson@rapidpackaging.com. And it's S-O-N for Anderson.
Excellent. Well, thank you both so much for joining me today on the Sourcing Hero podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well and always remember that you can be a hero too.